Straight talk from Israel.
You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.
What's been happening? We are in the midst of the high holiday season, Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, the Day of Atonement, and now the Sukkot holiday, which is a week long. Boy, that's why they call it the high holiday season. I don't know. No school. Well, actually, there was school today. But in any case, lots of school time off because of the high holiday season. And that means that the radio is off also. In other words, we are broadcasting, except for, of course, Yom Kippur. But we are broadcasting. We have Fox News updates that are fresh and current. However, our news and programming will be lagging a day or so behind because of the high holiday season, and our staff will be at home with their families celebrating. I want to say hi to all of our listeners here at IsraelNewsTalkRadio.com and give out a big, huge thank you to all of the listeners who donated some of their funds to keep Israel News Talk Radio going, to be able to deliver you news and opinion and stories from on the ground here in Israel to you wherever you are in the world, wherever you can get internet and pick us up. Really, thank you so much. Anybody who would like to support the station, we would love for you to do so. It would help tremendously. And I do write everybody back that has donated. So I will give you a personal thank you. And you can just go to our webpage at IsraelNewsTalkRadio.com. And at the top of the page with the menu bar going across, there's a donate button. Or you can scroll down a little bit and you'll see a bright green button that says donate. And you can get even your name on our wall of fame of the listeners that support us from all over. You can go take a look at the names as well. All right. So today on the show, we're going to be talking about all that's been happening in the news. Did you know that there were some terrorists who escaped an Israeli prison? Did you know that they succeeded? Did you know that Israel picked up four of them and as of Saturday night got the other two that were hiding in Jenin? We're going to be talking about the arms race and, of course, the history of the holiday of Sukkot. All this coming up today on the show because we have to cover it, don't we? We'll be right back. Join us in the chat room.
The return of the Jewish people to the land of Israel was prophesied in the Bible thousands of years ago and is coming true today. Shalom. Join me, Josh Wander, on Israel Unplugged. Listen in as we delve into the spiritual and physical aspects of the Jewish return to Zion. We'll discuss the biblically mandated, historic, and of course practical understandings of this incredible transition from exile to redemption. That's Israel Unplugged, every Monday on IsraelNewsTalkRadio.com.
All right, we're back here at the Tamar Yonah Show on IsraelNewsTalkRadio.com. And you know, just because it's the high holiday season in Israel and everything seems to stop and all one might think about is cooking and building a sukkah right now, history. History is moving forward and the news is not waiting for anyone. Now, I don't know if you know, but there was a very big terrorist prisoner escape that actually turned the faces red of the Israeli prison system, how they were able to dig a tunnel and escape, and all about how we were going to try and catch them. And we're going to be talking about the arms race and, of course, the history of Sukkot as we are in that holiday season now. So with no further ado, let me introduce our guests. We have joining us, Dr., and I should say here in this show, and Rabbi, by the way, Mordechai Ben Menachem. He's a researcher, former lecturer at Ben-Gurion University. He's authored over 80 books and 400 research papers on science, history, and more. He commentates on Mideast and world issues, and as I said again, he's also a rabbi. Welcome to the show, Rabbi and Dr. Mordechai Ben Menachem.
Thank you.
Wow, you know, I feel like I won the lotto. I got everything in one package. All right, let's start out with the one of the top stories in Israel over the, you know, the holiday period where people were off, and that is the escape of terrorists from an Israeli prison. Where would you like to start?
Well, you are right when you phrased it that it was terribly embarrassing for the prison authority, as it very well should be. It's something that should not have happened. And one of the prisoners that escaped was a really particularly terrible person, Zubeidi, who should have been, if nothing else, under more than just simply, pardon me, the expression, high security status. This is a person who has done really horrible things in his career, and he should have been guarded quite well, and he was not. Fortunately, he, as well as most of the others, four of the six escaped. Four have already been apprehended.
No, all six. Last night, they caught the last two.
Pardon me?
Last night, Saturday night, they caught the last two. They went into Jenin.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't hear that. Okay.
It's only several hours ago. It's okay. We forgive you. It's not even a day. Yes, they went in. We sent in our Yasamnikim, the real heavy-duty, you know, police force. And thank God we got them out with no casualties on our side.
Excellent. Yeah. Actually, that means that all six of them were caught with no casualties. So that's very good. They managed to do exactly nothing. They managed to accomplish nothing from their escape.
Well, they made Israel look silly.
Sorry. Well, yes.
As you said.
From their escape itself, they managed to do nothing. Other than the escape itself, they managed to do nothing. And there is one aspect here that is interesting, and I think it's very interesting. And that is that, I'll talk about the first four, because the other two, as I said, I wasn't aware of that, of their capture. But the first four were captured, recaptured within Israel. All of them, all four of them, with the aid of Arab Israeli citizens.
Yes.
Now, what
I was surprised by that too.
They escaped. Was there a tremendous amount of blustering by the so-called Palestinian Authority? Is there an opposite of the word authority? I don't know. The so-called Palestinian Authority blustering about how they, you know, everybody would help them, and they would, you know, they'd show us up and blah, blah, blah. And essentially what happened was that the Arab Israelis showed themselves, at least some of them, to be superb citizens, to be good people, to show that they really want to take part of the country of which they're citizens of. And this is under the most extreme circumstances. So it's the exact opposite of what happened this past May, when there were Arab Israelis who were rioting against the country. So this is very encouraging news. So I'm of course terribly displeased with the fact that they escaped, but I'm extremely pleased with the result of what happened from the escape.
Well, let me read to you one thing. This is from the Israel Link. It says here, one militant says the escapees that were captured by the IDF early Sunday morning, this was Saturday night going into Sunday morning, were not protected by the factions because they were located in eastern Jenin, away from where the resistance groups were located. More excuses will likely be heard over the coming days. So that's how the terrorists and the terrorist groups are rationalizing why they were caught by the Israelis.
Well, Edgar Allan Poe, the famous American author, used the word rationalization. You rationalize something to the point where it becomes irrational, which is basically what they're talking about there. It's not real. They're just blah blah. They're making noises, and okay, that's part of their job. Maybe that's what they think they're there for, but it's unimpressive.
Yeah, so just to let our listeners know how they escaped, they dug a tunnel from their cell to the outside of the prison walls, and there was a guardhouse right near there, right over it. But apparently it wasn't being manned at that time, and another guard what was he watching, television or something, and is maybe looking at his phone, who knows what, but they did manage to escape. It was a lot of, what do you call it, it made Israel red in the face, because these cells, these are terrorists. These are not people who are there for petty crimes. They should be inspected for trials like this to see if they can dig a tunnel and escape. There's
and
also said, been
one of them is not just a terrorist, but he's a particularly awful one.
Yes, there were some rumors going around. I don't know if they were founded to be true or not, that it could have been an inside job, that some of the guards there may have purposely looked away. I don't know if that was true or not. I didn't see anything further to that, but there were rumors going around like that at first. But in any case, all six of them have been apprehended, thank God. I know people were worried, you know, regular citizens were worried that maybe they would try to break in and to their homes and make another terrorist attack and really make a legend for themselves, a legacy, so to speak.
As I said, there's not a lot of meat on this bone because it's all over, but It's a very unfortunate circumstance. It should not have happened, and fortunately, it ended well.
Yes. Okay. For our listeners to know that the terrorists did give themselves up without a fight after shooting. Yes, but they weren't. Once the gunfight was over, they came out and they did not. They were not fighting. Okay. So this is all good. And we have a lot more stories to talk about. We have the arms race I know you wanted to talk about. And this is something that's very disturbing because you would think that in the year 2021, and we're supposed to be so intellectual and mature and elitist, the population today, and so woke, in fact, that it looks like the world is headed for a possible World War III with Iran, with China, with the United States. There's a lot of anger now between friendly Western allies, like France right now is fuming at the United States because they apparently wrecked some submarine deal with Australia. Why don't you tell us about that?
Okay. Let's go for the basic facts, first of all. Australia signed a deal some years ago with France to purchase 12 diesel-powered submarines for something on the order of $90 billion, $90 billion. The project is already very far over time. Things are not progressing well. I'm not putting blame on anybody. This is that sort of problems with schedules. It's very common in massive projects like this, particularly in military projects. So it's not out of the ordinary. But in any case, it was going badly, and the submarines were supposed to arrive in Australia something on the order of 2040. So that's it's a very long-term project. And the Australians were very unhappy with it. They were unhappy basically from the very beginning. There was a lot of debate in Australia about the quality of the project, of whether it was defined correctly or not, et cetera, et cetera. But we really want to talk about much more than just this project. So that was a project that was in terms of France. And France, of course, is fuming, rightly so, because the Biden administration, in its esteemed wisdom, did not bother to talk about this or mention it to its closest allies, but it did it behind his back.
He pulled Biden the rug out of from under the feet of the French.
And with total surprise, the French found out about it via the media. It's unbelievably ridiculous. France withdrew its ambassador from the United States, something that has not happened since the American Revolutionary War.
Yes. And they've said publicly that they cannot rely on America, that France cannot rely on America. That is a big thing for a Western country to say about another
Western country. It's France. It's, in other words, we're talking about a country which is one of the most central countries of the entire Western alliance. It's true that they're not part of NATO, but they are a very strong bulwark. They have a stronger military than anyone else in your on the European continent. They're a very important country. I mean, you can like or dislike the French culture. I don't care about that right now. But in terms of the military alliance, France is a very important country.
It is. It's a big deal. And we're going to talk more about that when we get back. We have to take a break, everybody. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
Hi, I'm Steve Miller.
And I'm Matt Zucker.
Join us for Lighten Up, where we take a look at the week's current events in Israel and from around the Jewish world through a humorous lens.
If you've been paying attention during these crazy times, you know that it's a challenge to parody life anymore. But join Steve and I as we give it the old college try. Not only is being happy an obligation, but life is just too short to take it all so seriously.
So join me, Steve Miller.
And me, Matt Zucker.
For Lighten Up every Monday morning at 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, 5 p.m. Israel, only on IsraelNewsTalkRadio.com.
Well, it seems to be an arms race triangle with Australia that wanted to buy submarines from France. Now America came in the picture, and they're going to be doing that. And Australia is now canceling their contract with France, and France is fuming at the United States because of this. In fact, leadership there in France was saying this wasn't just a sales contract that we had with Australia selling them these submarines. It was a partnership, and it has been broken. They were betrayed, and they are fuming. Our guest is Dr. Mordechai Ben-Menachem. We're going to be talking about the arms race, and later on in the show, the history of the holiday of Sukkot, which is on our which is presently here now. So, Dr. Mordechai Ben-Menachem, where would you like to start?
Well, I actually want to start from where you just left off. That we're talking about France, but we're not talking about France. France really isn't the subject here. France is has been hurt, admittedly, by the machinations of the Biden administration, doing things behind their back, not doing things in any way reasonably. Just as they did with the debacle in Afghanistan, when they, for instance, removed themselves from the Bagram air base without telling their allies, even the Afghan allies, ahead of time. No coordination, no discussion, nothing to The Australians didn't know that the Americans were pulling out until they heard it in the media of Afghanistan. The same thing happened here. But again, this isn't actually the subject. The subject is the arms race. And so, okay, so Australia is buying 8 nuclear submarines instead of 12 diesel submarines. That's one aspect, but that's only one aspect of many. We need to be aware, and the whole world needs to be aware of this, what's going on. There is an enormous arms race today in not just Australia, but Australia, Philippines, Indonesia, Taiwan, Japan, all of these countries are engaged in massive armaments. There was a very recently very large, relatively very large sale of armaments from Israel to, quote unquote, an unnamed Asian country. I can tell you now that it was the Philippines. I know that because I have friends there. Vietnam is arming, Laos is arming, even countries that people don't think about.
And why are they arming themselves?
They're all boosting up their defense postures and the defense spending enormously. Australia is now talking about moving from 2% of their gross domestic product to maybe even 4%, which is an unbelievable amount. Remember, Australia is enormous in terms of geographical size, but it's a relatively small country. It's only 24 million people. It's very, very sparsely populated. So Australia is not a large country. There's a lot that they cannot do. Just to give perspective on this, Australia is 24 million people. The Philippines is 120 million people.
Hmm.
People aren't aware of these numbers. The numbers are kind of crazy. Philippines is an archipelago with something, if I remember correctly, the numbers, something on the order of 9,000 islands.
But why are these countries arming these smaller ones?
Because Biden doesn't know how to handle China. When Trump was in office,
I hear
China was relatively. I mean, they caused the coronavirus and have caused 4.7 million people around the world to die, and et cetera, et cetera. We won't go into the virus because we don't have time for that today. But relatively speaking, China, the situation with China was more or less under control. Since America got this unbelievably weak president, everything is out of control. Everything.
Mm. Right. I mean, you look at the allies of America, they're questioning how much America has their back, how much they can depend on America. Now you've got France, who's fuming at the United States. By the way, Britain was involved in this as well, Britain and America with Australia. So
Yes. It has a ridiculous name for some reason of AUKUS. AUKUS.
And so is France angry at Britain as well? I heard that they weren't as angry with Britain.
Yes.
They're more angry with the United States.
They're more angry with the United States. They removed their ambassadors both to the United States and to Australia, but not to Britain. At least not yet. I haven't some so far.
Mm-hmm.
They're very angry with the UK as well. But again, the story here really isn't France. The story here is not really the submarine deal. First of all, the deal that's being talked, the AUKUS deal, is much broader than just the submarines. Now, aside from 8 nuclear-powered submarines, by the way, nuclear-powered, propulsion is nuclear. The armament is not. People should be aware of that. We're not talking about anything concerning nuclear proliferation. We're only talking about nuclear propulsion. And everybody's been very, very clear on that point. But the Australians are also purchasing a large numbers of intercontinental ballistic missiles from the United States and delivery systems. So they are actually, it's much more than just submarines. I would say from our perspective that the Israeli government, if we actually had a defense minister and not a jerk, we should be very actively looking at the idea of converting one or more of our submarines into a nuclear submarine as well. Remember, a diesel submarine is limited to probably 2 to 3 weeks out at sea before it needs to be refueled. A nuclear submarine needs to be refueled once every 33 years. Essentially, you fuel it up once and it lasts for the life of the machine. So Israel should definitely be looking in that direction as well. And I personally believe, I don't have details, and I'm not going to go into detail that I don't have. I personally believe that we have the technology and the knowledge to do it ourselves. We don't need the United States for that. People should be aware that these propulsion systems that we're talking about, their technology is from 1958.
So Mordecai... Sorry, you know, for all of us who are listening in, we're hearing about France is angry at the United States and Britain and Australia, and Australia is going to be getting submarines from someone else. How does this affect the average person? Like, why should we care? Bring it down to our level.
Well, first of all, arms races are expensive. We're talking about spending hundreds of billions of dollars over the next 10 years. Hundreds of billions. That's not a small amounts of money. So this is the quantities of funding that affects everyone, whether they're aware of it personally or not. Every human being on the planet is affected by this enormous arms race in every country. When Japan and China face off with one another, that affects directly. It affects India. It affects Pakistan. It affects Iran. And indirectly, it affects immediately Israel as well, the entire Middle East. It affects our budding relationship between Israel and the United Arab Emirates, since the Emirates are a big supplier of energy in the entire Pacific region to China, to Japan, to Indonesia, etc. So all of these things are interconnected. Everything today is singing one song. These are no places an island anymore.
Okay.
These are very important points.
Okay. Now we understand that China has its eyes on Taiwan. You were talking about other smaller nations that were gearing up militarily in anticipation that China may try to invade them. We understand that Taiwan is probably number one on their list. Do you want to comment on any of that?
Well, number one on their list was actually Hong Kong. They've taken over Hong Kong. They breached the treaty that they had with the UK concerning Hong Kong. They breached the treaty they had with Portugal concerning Macau. They're doing terrible things in terms of human rights in Xinjiang, in Tibet, in Mongolia. They're trying to take over essentially the entire so-called South China Sea, which means that they're directly threatening Philippines, Indonesia, Vietnam, and Japan. And they are actually not just implied threats, but they're actually threatening them. They're actually talking about, here's something that people probably aren't aware of in the United States. China last week sent warships into American territorial waters, and the Biden administration did not react. Warships into the territorial waters of Alaska. So Americans need to be aware that America, physically, the United States geographically is being threatened actively.
All right. Any last word you want to say before we go out to the break? Because we're going to be talking about Sukkot, the holiday, after we get back.
I'm trying to cover in a very, very quick and short amount of time an enormous subject. People need to be aware of this. They need to look up things on their own as well.
All right. We're going to be back, everybody. Don't go anywhere.
Are you tired of political correctness and the fear that you might offend someone?
I'm not afraid to offend you.
Wow, look who's talking tough.
One has to be tough to keep sane today.
Hi, I'm Alan Skorsky.
And I'm Bella Seabrow.
And join us every Wednesday for The Definitive Wrap as we interview the most sought-after guests and expose progressive trends that masquerade as enlightenment but actually destroy our freedoms.
We are the No Woke Zone, so buckle up to this exciting show.
Buckling up, but I'm driving.
Sure, you can drive, but I'm the navigator.
Tune in for the No Nonsense, The Definitive Wrap Show, every Wednesday on Israel News Talk Radio.
All right, we are back here at the Tamar Yonah Show on IsraelNewsTalkRadio.com, and our guest is Dr. Mordechai Ben-Menachem. Today he's going to take his rabbi hat and put that on, because we're going to be talking now about the history of the holiday of Sukkot. What is Sukkot, pray tell? The holiday, what do they call it in English? The holiday of booths or something like that? This is where the Jewish people, we go out, we build like a little hut. Well, you know what? Let me have the rabbi tell you. Go ahead.
Okay, you know, let me put it, I don't want to use the word history for the moment. I want to use the word culture. So we can look at it culturally more, which actually covers the history as well, but I want people to understand the concepts that we're talking about here. And I think this will sort of surprise a lot of people. As people are probably aware, even people that aren't very familiar, in this time of the year, we spend a great amount of time praying, a great amount of time in synagogues. I mean, the New Year's is 2 days, which is called conceptually one extended day. Kippur is actually more than a day because Erev Kippur, the day before, is actually also very significant. So it's sort of a day and a half. And the Sukkot is 7 + 1 days. And I'll explain that concept in a moment. Now, so what are we praying about? You know, we're all standing there praying and praying and praying. And what are we praying about? What actually happens is that people that understand Hebrew and read the prayers don't really understand what the prayers say. The concept of the prayers, all of the prayers, Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, and Sukkot, and I'm accepting now the extra day that I mentioned a moment ago, except for that extra day, we're not praying for us. We're praying for the world. We're praying for every non-Jew out there, everyone. Our prayers are for the world, not for either the country of Israel or the state of Israel or the Jewish people or anything like that. I mean, we're included in that part of it. We're part of the world. But that's not our job. Our job on Rosh Hashanah is to talk about the everyone in the world should have peace and should have plenty of food and should have rainfall in the season, etc. Our job on Yom Kippur is to talk about that everyone should be aware of what they've done that's against God's will, and that people should be thinking about things like that. All people, not just Jews, everybody. Our concept on Sukkot is, again, people aren't much aware of this. There were, at the term of the time of the temple, we had 70 sacrifices. None of them for us. 70 for the 70 peoples of the world. None of those are for us. For 7 days, we pray and we sacrifice for everyone in the world, not for us. I mean, again, we're included. We're part of the world. But it's not that we're standing there praying for ourselves. We're praying for everyone else, for everyone. And then on that final day, the day that I said there was 7 + 1, and only on that day that we say, okay, God, we hope that we've done a good job, the job that you've asked us to do. We hope that in these past 3 weeks, our prayers have been accepted and the world will have peace and the world will have plenty and people won't be in pain and there won't be other nasty things. And now we'd sort of like to ask a little bit about ourselves as well, if you don't mind. And it really is phrased that way. It really is phrased in an almost apologetic way, saying, okay, we've done all this, and now we want to just ask a little bit about ourselves. And how do we go about doing that? Basically by praising the physical object called the Sefer Torah, the Torah itself, the actual scroll. And that's what that final day is about, really, is saying, look how we dance with this, with your law, how we celebrate with it, how we show that it is the center of our joy and celebration. And please take that into account when you think about whether or not to accept our prayers that we've prayed for these past 3 weeks. That's the basic concept, not only about Sukkot, but about all of the month of Tishrei, although the first month, the calendar month of the year.
Okay, so let's go to real basics though for people. So why do Jews build a sukkah, a hut, on the holiday, for the holiday?
There are a lot of reasons, but let me just go over it, take an historical reason and a spiritual reason. The historical reason is because when we exited from Egypt, we had no other choice. That's what we had. So we need to remember that we were unjustly enslaved, that we were trod upon, and when we escaped, we lived in Sukkot, in little huts that were very temporary, were very flimsy, and we lived that way for 40 years in the desert.
All right.
So that's an historical perspective.
Okay. The harvest season?
And that has nothing to do with the Sukkah itself. You're asking about the Sukkah.
Okay.
Harvest season is a separate issue paralleling to the Sukkah itself. And that affects, for instance, how we make it, etc. In other words, you have to make it out of things that grow. You can't make it out of things that have any permanence. And it has to be something that you make, not something that you can't have a Sukkah that stands there all year and just, now I'm going to use it or something like that. You have to do an act of actual making the Sukkah. That's part of the thing. And that brings us, actually, that bridges us to what I said about the spiritual part of it, is that, let me try to put it in a sort of humoristic way, okay? As we all probably know, Jews, generally speaking, don't drink to excess. We drink, but we don't drink to excess. And then along comes Purim, and we're all supposed to get somewhat potty. The staff of life, as it's called in English, is bread. And then along comes Pesach, and we don't have bread. So, you know, suddenly you change something. You change the status quo. The most joyful thing for any normal human being is to say, I have a home. I have an actual house. I whether it's owned or rented, it doesn't matter, but I have a home. And then along comes Sukkot, and we say, you don't have a home. You're outside in this little hut. Yeah. So, don't accept life as being something that's designed to be complacent. Life is not something that you determine its permanence. You determine how you look at it. Its permanence is not part of your job. Permanence is what you ask God for. And that's not really permanence, but that's for Him to look at you in such a way that you have all of your needs supplied for you. So we need to understand on a spiritual level that when we're looking at how our lives are managed, how our lives work, we cannot be overly complacent. We need to look at everything, at our food, as I said, Pesach, the issue of bread. We look at our joys, at our joyful things. All right, so you confine yourself to drinking, but not drinking to excess. And then there's one day when you must drink to excess. You look at your house and say, oh, I have a lovely home and blah, blah, blah. And I can invite guests. And then we have a week when you can't. So everything has its counters. These are very difficult issues for me to explain things.
Can you in one sentence or two sentences tell our listeners why we wave the lulav, which is we have an etrog, which is a citron fruit, we have a branch of willow, the branch of palm, etc. Why we wave that on the holiday very quickly in a sentence or two?
I don't know if this can be done very quickly. basically, each one of the four kinds symbolizes something separate. We don't have time now to go into what each one of them symbolizes. The fruit, for instance, has it tastes good, it smells good, it's pretty to look at, etc., etc. Each one of them has
a symbol, symbolizes something. Yes.
Sorry?
It symbolizes something.
Yeah, each of them have characteristics, and joining them together.
But why do we wave them? Tell our listeners.
We wave them because there has to be some physical aspect. You can't have something which is merely spiritual only in concept. You have to have a physical connection to the spiritual act. There needs to be an actual act. We are, in the end, at the end of everything, we are human beings. We are part of creation. We are not above creation. So you need to do an actual physical act in order to connect oneself to the spirituality behind the concepts that we're talking about.
Okay, well, you know what? We have to end here, and there's so much to learn about the holiday, and it's a joyous, joyous holiday. So I would encourage everybody to go to Chabad.org. That's Chabad.org, and put a search in for Sukkot, Sukkot, or Succcot. There's different ways to spell it, but I'm sure you'll be able to find information there. It's a joyous holiday. It's an important holiday. It's a happy holiday, and it's a week long, so you're going to want to know more about it. Thank you, everybody, for being with us. Happy New Year. Thank you, Dr. Mordechai Ben Menachem and Rabbi Mordechai Ben Menachem.
Thank you, Rabbi.
If you love Israel News Talk Radio, then you'll love our Facebook page. We keep you up to date on what's happening in Israel, plus little surprise treasures that we don't share on the radio. Go now to follow us on Facebook. Just look for the Israel News Talk Radio Facebook page, and don't forget to subscribe and follow us by clicking on the like button. We post great stuff there that you'll want to share. Israel News Talk Radio on Facebook and Israel News Radio on Twitter.
If you're hearing this message, everyone else can too. Advertise with Israel News Talk Radio and get your message out to people. We'll build a personalized package for you. Contact advertising at israelnewstalkradio.com.
Straight talk from Israel.
You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.
Hey, this is Jake in Anchorage, Alaska, and I love listening to all the super interesting interviews and up-to-date information on what's happening in Israel.
Hello, this is Anna King, originally from London, now living in Israel. And what can I say? Israel News Talk Radio is my cup of tea.
My name is Bhaskar. I'm from India, and I love listening because you get to know the truth and wonderful voices from this lovely country.
Mom!
Okay, wait a minute.
Hi, this is Chava Dax, and I'm calling for the rolling hills of Maale Adumim, just north of Jerusalem. I always listen to Israel News Talk Radio to get all the latest news and commentary and to keep me up to date every day.
This is Sarah Dax from Maale Adumim, and I'm 12. I wish Israel News Talk Radio was boring so my mom wouldn't listen to it all the time. Mom!
You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.
News, opinion, and more. You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.